If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
There's four things that we do that have been successful for us to win deals. Number one, we'll make an offer. If it comes on the market, and now we've kind of hit a scale where deals come to us direct. But let's say it hits the market. We'll make an offer within 24 hours of it hitting the market. That's number one. Number two, we don't send letters of intent, LOIs. We send purchase contracts. All right, let's cut to the chase. We're here. Number three.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ben Koga is an investor relations specialist and partner at HJH Investments. He is also an Austin, Texas-based commercial real estate broker with more than 15 years of experience with a passion to help investors make wise decisions. He has his MBA from the Acton School of Business and is also CCIM certified. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Man, this is great. I'm pumped to really get into what you guys do. But first, you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, sure. So I started as a real estate agent in the commercial real estate business. Went back to school in 2009 when the recession hit, got my MBA, then got out, worked for a high net worth family office doing asset management. Fast forward, that ran its course, got my started a brokerage company, a development company, and started investing. And so that brings me to where I am today, which is raising capital for commercial real estate syndications. And to date, over the last 5 years, we've bought over $300 million of commercial real estate properties. Yeah.
All right. You make it sound easy. I like that. I like easy.
That was a 15-year summary in about
45 seconds. It's amazing how time will do that to you. You work for a family office. What were they buying?
Yes. So they're based here in Austin, Texas. They have a large portfolio. It's really a very wide range of properties. It's also retail, office. It's mostly a retail office throughout Austin, Texas. And that gave me a lot of foundation on like the fundamentals of what it is to own that type of real estate. And I learned a lot. He's still a great mentor of mine.
Right, right. Yeah, I was going to say, what a great training ground for what you do now. Was there ever a time when you were there at the office and you at the family office, you said, hey, this is something I want to do on my own? Was that kind of what precipitated you branching out on your own?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always wanted to own my own business, be a partner. I'm a partner in this business. I didn't start this business, but I've been there for a long time and, learning. So I've always learned that it's better to copy genius than create mediocrity. And so I have been surrounding myself with great mentors, people who have been doing it in a positive and efficient way, and learn as much as I can along the way. And just that high net worth family office was a stepping stone, really, in hindsight, a perfect stepping stone to get to do what I do now.
Right, right. So what is your role at your company now?
Right. So my title is Director of Investor Relations, and that means that I focus on raising capital. I focus on educating. I focus on bringing opportunities to our investors. I also oversee the marketing and just kind of schmooze people on a daily basis. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So here in the last, you said you guys are at about 300 million assets under management right now?
That's correct. It's a pretty evenly spread between retail properties, industrial properties, and office properties throughout the United States.
I gotcha. That's interesting. I'd love to, at some point before this is over, we need to circle back and hear what your thoughts are, especially on two of your three asset classes, as they pertain to 2020 and 21. Maybe we'll get back to that. But I'd really love to hear kind of how you guys, I know you said that this company wasn't started, you were not one of the founders, but now you obviously are a partner in the company. So how did you guys grow and what was your strategy for such exponential growth?
So it really goes back to Gary Keller's book called The One Thing, which means that we are focused on one thing. It sounds like I'm doing a lot, but really what we're doing is one thing, which is buying commercial real estate with high credit tenants that have long-term leases. And so we have a system where we do research every day, looking at between 1,000 and 1,500 projects every single week, looking for assets that have that high credit tenant with a long-term lease. And on a weekly basis, on average, we'll make about 16 offers a week on assets around the country. And about one out of 16 of those we'll actually be able to put under contract. And then one out of three of those will actually pass our due diligence process. So that's how we've been able to scale up, is by really casting the net wide, but looking for something very, very, very narrow. And so that's a little tidbit about how we've been able to do what we've done.
Right. No, I mean, that sounds good on paper, but in practicality, there's a lot of steps to that. I mean, you can't just, you know, shotgun offers out there and then be like, well, you know, I mean, even willy-nilly at that, you know, it's just not, that's not a repeatable or sustainable method. So you guys have a procedure in place for making 16 offers a week, right?
Correct.
What was it like developing that as you guys went from making, say, one offer a week to 16 offers a week?
Yeah, it's definitely been a growing process, but really, like, we've honed in on exactly what it is that we want to buy. And we've learned some tricks along the way, or I wouldn't say trick, but maybe like just some strategies that have worked for us that I'm happy to share with you. So there's four things that we do that have been successful for us to win deals. Number one, we'll make an offer if it comes on the market. And now we've kind of hit a scale where deals come to us direct. But let's say it hits the market. We'll make an offer within 24 hours of it hitting the market. That's number one. Number two, we don't send letters of intent, LOIs. We send purchase contracts. All right, let's cut to the chase. We're here. Number three, we'll preemptively send a list of references, right? Other sellers, brokers, investors, you know, whoever. Feel free to call them, because you're going to hear from them that we do what we say we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, we promise them that we'll physically be personally be on property within 2 weeks of being under contract, no matter where it is in the country, right? So, you know, we've also learned you can't steal in slow motion. So you have to get there fast. And that doesn't mean that we're going to close fast, because usually we're never the highest price. We're often probably not going to be the fastest, because we really do slow down. Once we get a deal under contract, we will take our time. Not that we're going to slow down, but we're going to really focus on our due diligence to make sure that it is what we think it is. Right? And so that's been part of our process, part of the success plan that we've had.
Right. I love the sending of list of references. I know I told you before we came on the recording here that, you know, we weren't looking for necessarily your playbook, but I think that's a great, I mean, that's just one step above everyone else, because I think oftentimes if you're the listing broker, you're getting an offer in, but you're reading between the lines to determine if this person is eligible or if they're even going to get the deal done. Like, oh, what are their terms? When does money go hard? When do all these things? And they kind of, you know, put them into a not so scientific algorithm and say, yeah, this offer's better because of X, Y, and Z. But you kind of shortcut that process as well by saying, hey, maybe the terms aren't as everything you wanted, but we also close. And here's why. And I think that's a great point. And also going physically on site. I mean, I can't imagine one never going physically on site, but I'm sure that it happens more often than we.
Well, within 2 weeks. So like that, basically we're saying, hey, we will be there, you know, and a lot of these deals are high credit tenant deals that are maybe in secondary or tertiary markets. So they can be a little bit of a pain in the butt to get there, but that's the extra step that we're willing to take. Next week, I'm going to Hibbings, Minnesota in the middle of February. I'm going to be freezing our pushes off, but you know, that's what it takes to get deals done.
Right. So talk to us about the offer process. I mean, obviously you guys have developed, like you said, an off-market pipeline where people are sending deals to you, but even getting to the point where you have the ability to look wide and yet narrowly focus. I know that's probably a contradiction of terms, but in order to even find 16 properties that are worth offering on requires, and again, I'm not looking for your system necessarily, but more the thought process behind it. Like, how did you guys figure that out? I mean, you can get lost on Craxy or LoopNet or anything else. You know, LoopNet's, of course, where everybody says deals go to die. But, you know, you can get lost on there looking at stuff coming across your desk. So you guys have clear filters that come through. How did you develop that filter and say, okay, this is how we actually, you know, boil this down to things we want to look at?
Yeah, it actually is a reverse process. You think about it from unit economics going up. And so what I mean by that is that tenant has customers and they sell a service or a product to those customers, does that customer, like, what is the demand for that product? Can they, you know, what is the profit margins on that? And that trickles up to, okay, well, how much is the rent that they're paying to us as landlords? Can they afford that rent based on those unit economic basics? And it trickles back up to, well, if they're going to pay us that rent, at what's the NOI, because we structure our deal where we pay out monthly dividends to our investors. And so do we have enough cash flow to be able to afford to do that? And so on and so forth, all the way up to, you know, keep going up the process to, okay, well, what's the offer that we can make? Generally speaking, we're making 10 cap offers on assets. And that means that the sellers are motivated. If they're going to sell it to us at a 10 cap in today's market, they're motivated. Okay, so then we kind of got to dig into, okay, well, why are they motivated? So we ask those questions. Oftentimes, there's a lot of people who are motivated for reasons that are completely unrelated to the actual properties. So, I mean, we just bought a deal from a family office that sold us a $20 million project that is fully stabilized with a absolutely incredible tenant, publicly traded tenant. And the family, one person in the family, unfortunately, was financially injured during the COVID situation. And so they needed capital. And so the whole family was forced to sell the project. And they sold it to us because we do what we say we're going to do. And well, obviously, we agreed on terms. But yeah, that was a home run for our team and for our investors.
Right. No, and being prepared for that, you know, like you said, kind of reverse engineering what you're doing in order to figure that out. That's awesome. Do you find yourself across the country working with the same tenants over and over?
It is. We do have a lot of the same tenants. We've done several deals with like Academy Sports. We have Starbucks. We have a lot of different tenants. But really, what drives it is the credit of the tenants. We're looking for this triple B credit with more than 5 years on the term upon, you know, closing on the deal. So we know that we have that stability. We know to the penny just about what that cash flow is going to look like for the foreseeable future, which gives us a lot of confidence when we're moving forward into deals.
Sure. How do you, let me ask a negative question if I can. How do you mitigate risk with a national, and I'll give an example for this, but with a credit rated tenant, especially if it's the, you know, the same tenant across multiple cities and multiple locations. So for instance, in 2020, we saw in the parking industry, leases, it didn't matter if you're a nationally credit rated, you know, parking operator or not. They just said, hey guys, sorry, we're not honoring our leases. It just, there's no money in the bank to do it. Good luck. Which, I mean, yeah, it was 2020. So nobody's going to throw a fit. It's just like, well, we're all just going to, we're in this together. So, you know, we'll figure it out. How do you guys mitigate that risk?
Yes. Yeah, so a couple of different ways. Number one, we, in addition, when we raise capital, we'll raise a robust amount in reserves, like an extra, like way above market average, right? So then when 2020 hit, we preemptively back in March or around, I don't know. Anyways, we went to our tenants. We said, hey, listen, we're here to help you, right? Tenants win, then we win. If tenants lose, then we lose. So we need to all help each other. Right. So we went to them. We said, hey, listen, well, you know, if you need a couple months of free rent to help you through this process, we'll do that. In exchange, we are going to ask for an extension on the backside of your lease or for you to pay it out in some sort of increments in 2021 or however, you know, whatever works best. But we don't, like, nobody wins by the tenant losing and going away.
Sure. Sure.
And so we had to navigate through that process. And luckily, we're back to stabilization. We're here in the beginning of 2021. And yeah, I mean, that's one way to mitigate it. I mean, we luckily, you know, since we have so many great quality tenants, we haven't had those types of issues, right? We have large balance sheets, but yeah, we definitely had to hit the pause button on some of it.
Right. No, that's fair. And I like what you said about raising robust reserves. The other question I'd have on that, and again, you know, I'm just satisfying my own need to punch holes in theories. When you raise robust reserves, obviously that brings down the rate of return and your cash on cash return on the total project, because now you got all this money really doing nothing. So if you raise an extra $1 million for a project and it sits there, well, I mean, so how do you, I mean, I guess you guys are buying right. So that's probably step one, but what else are you doing to ensure that that money isn't just an idle asset?
Yeah, so we subscribe to what we call the safety first model. And so first and foremost is to protect our investors' capital. That's our mission, in fact, to protect and then grow our investors' capital. So we're more concerned about return of capital than return on capital. And so you're right. We would certainly be making a higher cash on cash return for us and our investors should we not raise those higher amount in reserves. But that's not our goal. Our goal is first to protect our investors' hard-earned capital.
Right. And it sounds like that's a mandate that you guys have developed from having investor conversations.
Absolutely. I mean, just about anybody would much rather see their money come back than, like everybody has their own different risk tolerances, but that's our policy. You know, like you're welcome to go and put your money in a really risky asset. That's fine. That's just not what that's not what we do. And so.
Right. Right. So you weren't buying GameStop last week, the first week of.
No, but it was fun to watch. We have two GameStops as tenants, so hopefully it'll be we've actually extended some of the leases throughout COVID, which is pretty incredible too.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting. So those of you hearing this, this will probably go live mid to late March. So we're talking about this here the first week of February. I guess we'll see what happens between now and when this episode goes live. Let's transition here a little bit if we can and really talk about the asset classes that you guys have elected to invest in. So you syndicate office, industrial, and retail. And can you kind of give us a brief overview of not just those markets, but maybe why you see opportunity there when others maybe don't? Industrial, of course, we know is probably your golden goose right now. Is that a fair assessment?
They're all doing well, but yeah, we're very stable with our industrial assets. Retail. So let's talk about retail for a second. I hear a lot of people say retail's dead, right? Amazon this and that. So, okay, well, the secret's out about Amazon and how they're going to crush retail. However, they're not. I'm driving around all over the country. I'm not seeing vacant shopping centers everywhere. I think there's a misnomer about retail, right? If you go to a shopping center, you're not really shopping. You're going there for restaurants, services, nails, medical, dental, whatever, something like that. So I think there actually should be like an industry-wide, recalibration with how we, call them service centers, but then that kind of sounds like an auto thing. So I don't know what we should do there, but we're seeing a lot of great assets that in the retail space that are very stable and some of them are really crushing it throughout this COVID situation.
Right. That makes 100% sense. And that's the sentiment, that which is probably good. I would say, for you as a buyer, hey, let everybody think retail's dead. So then we can go out and just keep acquiring assets. So for those of you listening, retail's dead. I'm just kidding. But no, seriously, I think that's a good because you do hear that. You hear that in the news that retail's dead, blah, blah, blah. But you're right. I don't know what you call it. Not a service center, but it's really things that you can't get in an Amazon box. I mean, you can't get your nails done in an Amazon box. Maybe you can. It'd be kind of weird, but
I would just say, to your listeners, like drive around town and see what you see. See who's in there. See who's gone and see who comes back. But ultimately, it starts with that fundamental, this unit economics, right? How many people does that nail salon need to come in here to get their nails done to be able to break even and then above that to be able to pay rent, so on and so forth, that trickles up to what we end up, distributing out to our investor.
Right. That's really cool. Talk to us about office space. What's that look like?
Yeah, office space, we're very bullish on suburban office buildings right now. We think that there is a major market disconnect between those. So what I mean by suburban is either one story, maybe two story office buildings. We're not talking about CBD with you got to put your team up the elevator up and down and all that kind of stuff. Suburban offices are generally speaking lower rent costs. So that will allow tenants to either, move out to the suburbs or take on more space for either less or the same cost as they might in the CBD. They can put their people in right at ground floor, so on and so forth. So we just bought a building that is occupied by Moen, like the faucet maker. We bought a building by Jacobs Engineering, which is a big engineering firm. Fidelity, as in Fidelity. And so these are tenants that, are going to ride out this wave and probably be much, much stronger And, you know, a lot of their competition is probably going to fall by the wayside. And then there's this disconnect with sellers who, you know, are scared to death of office. And we're just, you know, we're moving forward. Like we're having a great time buying these properties that should be selling at 7.5, 8 caps. We're buying them for near 10 caps and it's going well.
Right. No, that's great. And that's a great point. I'm even thinking about people like, you know, my dentist. Gosh, I went to my dentist yesterday and it's exactly what you describe. It's a one-story office building. They're not going anywhere. I mean, where's the dentist going to go? And that's classified as office. So that's, and I can think of whole industrial parks that are that one-story, two-story offices. So that's really cool. What does industrial, and again, I'm not trying to pick your playbook here, but I'm really just curious what your view on these asset classes as a whole are. You know, what does industrial look like for you?
From where I stand in Austin, Texas, industrial is certainly a very hot topic right now, but also across the U.S. We just bought an industrial property in Odessa, Texas, that is occupied by a publicly traded company. Again, it really, for us, it's starts with the credit of the tenant, length of their lease. We want more than five. So five is the minimum beyond when upon the day that we close on the deal. And then we look at all the other obvious things like the location and the rent. Is the rent high, low, or just right? Is what's the condition of the property, you know, so on and so forth. Just basic due diligence questions that we're going to ask. And so we're also very bullish on industrial. However, I find that in today's market, beginning of 2021, the secret's out about industrial. And so it's much harder to find 10 cap deals right now.
Right. Yeah. I can only imagine. Based here in Memphis, that's obviously, it's a crossroads as well. And that's for here, it's huge industrial. That's, from rail to FedEx to trucking. I mean, it's a crossroads and all of those converge right here. And finding quality industrial assets at a price that makes sense is a challenge.
We'd love to buy something in your market for sure. So
if I find anything, I'm calling you. Ben, let's jump into the final four here. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Build relationships with sponsors, build relationships with brokers, build relationships with other investors. It's all about relationships.
That's awesome. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I have been sleeping, which I know is something that you could use these days, given how you are.
Good.
Not that much, but this last couple of days, I got 8 hours. And it's game changer.
Man, that's awesome. Good for you. I haven't heard that answer yet. I like that a lot. It's amazing how much, a regular night of sleep can really change.
I mean, I'm a very healthy person. People always talk about nutrition and working out, but it's so rare that people talk about how important sleep is.
Right. You're absolutely right. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I started a mastermind group. And within the mastermind group, I had the opportunity to mentor other people. And just that's been a really fun way, is just mentoring as many people as I possibly can right now.
That's super cool. Good for you. Ben, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
Yeah, sure. So you can easily find me through my website, which is hjhinvestments.com. I'm on the socials. My name is Ben Kogut, KOGUT. And if you also, one other thing, we just released an ebook. You can go check that out at our website as well at hjhinvestments.com.
Awesome. Ben, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.